Hey ladies, are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? Well, you're definitely not alone. There are more than 1,000 hormone disruptors living in our environment right now. It's in your food, your water, the air you breathe, the clothes you wear, your skincare products. They all mess with your hormones. Then there's the natural hormone changes your body goes through, premenopause, menopause, and while it's a natural process, it doesn't mean you have to suffer through it. The good news is, you don't have to suffer through it anymore because now you have Hormone Harmony, a formula made only with herbal ingredients that are shown to reduce hormonal symptoms in women of all ages. Hormone Harmony is not just a hormone support and supplement. It's become a phenomenon. Women can't stop talking about it on social media. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. And the biggest benefit? Well, my wife says it makes her feel like her own self again. And that's what women mention over and over in the reviews. And there are over 30,000 reviews for Hormone Harmony. And for a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use code RLRC at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use code RLRC for 15% off today. That's HAPPYMAMMOTH.com and use code RLRC. Hey, y'all, let me tell you about Gobble. All Gobble meal kits are pre-prepped. That means less work for you and less waste in your kitchen. Their meal kits include everything you need so you can save time at the store or just skip that trip entirely. I got the box in and I had three different meals. I had a Kung Pao chicken, crispy fish tacos, and a beef bourguignon, however you say it. But let me tell you about the classic beef bourguignon. Look, it came with beef pot roast and a beef broth concentrate, red wine demi-glace, cremini mushrooms, cipollone onions, mashed potatoes, baby carrots, and rosemary thyme butter. It was so easy to make. Literally like 15 minutes it took Cindy. And let me tell you something, all the dishes were fire, but this thing was like a taste explosion in my mouth. It's just unreal. We've got to spend more time together and more time doing the things we love because everything came in this one single box right to my door. So see what a difference Gobble will make for your household. Right now, they're offering my listeners a fantastic limited time deal. You get $120 off across four boxes, plus free shipping and free cookies. And let me tell you, those cookies, I ate one that was sin-baked and it was delicious. Go to gobble.com/real life. That's gobble.com/real life for $120 off your first four boxes. This offer is not available on the home site, so don't miss out. This is genius. It's taste explosions in your mouth like you never had.
The other rights remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. You have a right to an attorney prior to or during any question. If you can't afford one, the court will appoint one for you. Do you understand your rights?
When the wolf is at your door,
this episode of Real Life, Real Crime, the podcast may contain descriptions of acts of violence or that of a sexual nature and should be for people that are 18 years or older. Heed my warning, people. I do not get the facts of these cases off of the internet or for some television show. The facts I'm retelling you were presented to me by the victims of the crimes or the perpetrators who committed the crimes against the victims. My descriptions of the crime scenes, what I saw with my own two eyes. If you're going to get offended, please turn this podcast off now. Thank you. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of Real Life, Real Crime, the podcast. As always, I'm your host, Woody Overton. And today, we're going to be continuing Scorched, y'all. I'm about to get into the real meat of the matters, which everybody knows about, but we'll give you a little more information than you've ever had before. And Scorched on both sides. And the story now has new legs. And part of what I'm going to be talking about today is because of what was or wasn't done on what I'm about to tell you about. But hashtag justice for Haley came out yesterday to everybody, and Patreon members and convicts, you got it first earlier in the week. And hell of a story, y'all. Please like and share it. Share it most. I don't care if you like it. Share it, and then share it with hashtag justice for Haley. We need everybody in the world to hear this. So when we do what we're going to do at the end of it, people would be pissed off, and they should be. Now, the first episode, it has the 911 call and then the family interview. The second episode is going to actually, we have the video body cam footage from all the people that responded and everything else. And I'm starting with one of the first responding officers on the scene and what happened when they first come in contact with the suspect and what have you. And then more interviews with the family. And of course, that video and a lot more videos that we're taking at the same time from different people are going to be put up and locked up for the patrons and convicts. And y'all remember, please don't share anything that's in there. There's a lot of sensitive information from a lot of sensitive stuff from the crime scene and stuff like that, that you wouldn't want the whole world to know about. We want the whole world to know about it because it's a murder and it's bad and what had happened, but we just don't, those videos and stuff don't need to be shared everywhere. Okay. And True Crime Time 4 starts on Monday. Cindy and I bringing you a new series of stories and segments and different things on True Crime Time 4. And let's get down to business. Okay. So some of these, y'all, I'm going to kind of paraphrase. I'm going to go through it, but we're back to trial. And we're on Thursday, the 22nd of July, 2004. And this is the state versus Scott Peterson. And the prosecution calls their witness number 87, Miss Angeline R. Moore, who is a DOJ criminalist. And basically, y'all, all she says is that when the bodies came out of the bay, she talked about DNA and how it's used and what she collected. Like for Lacey's DNA, she had 8 hairs collected from Lacey's hairbrush and a pap smear, I guess from her OBGYN. And she extracted Lacey's DNA from from the hairs. The pap smear actually was never used. And for the baby Doe, which we know is Connor, she analyzed DNA from Dennis and Sharon Rocha, which is consistent with being the daughter. That's, you know, that familiar DNA they have now, that it was Lacey's baby, right? And it's consistent with being the biological child of Scott and Lacey, and statistically 18 billion times more likely to get that profile from Scott and Lacey than anybody else in the world, right? The defense attorney, Mark Garagos, he was like, I don't have any questions. We don't disagree that the bodies were Lacey and Connors. All right, moving on to prosecution witness number 88, Rodney Oswalt, who's another criminalist with the DOJ. Now, this is where it gets a little murky, y'all. And the LA Innocence Project now taking up Scott's case. And the whole reason this whole fucking thing is scorched and we're still talking about it. And the one thing they want on appeal to have recently DNA tested is this. So Rodney Oswalt testifies that he analyzed the hair on the pliers, and he says that there were two separate hairs, not one hair broken into two pieces. And but he believes that when you look at the hairs like they were on the pliers, that it was reasonably believed that it was one hair, right? That just broke in half, but it was actually two separate hairs. And he also examined this is the scorch part. He also examined the pubic hair found on the duct tape on Lacey's body, and he ruled out Scott as the donor, right? So he said Lacey may have been the donor. Well, motherfucker, find out if Lacey's the donor or not, because here we are all these years later, and now that's the one piece that the LA Innocence Project is able to get tested in. Look, if that hair comes back, or it's not being Lacey's, it comes back to some sex offender or something, and I mean, you should have done this, I mean, before they even asked for it. If I know this is on appeal and they're going to do it, I'm going to test it just to see. If you got Scott Peterson bad, which I don't like to do, if you got him scorched, then he deserves to be free. But that's not exactly what's going to happen, y'all. I don't know how you have, I guess duct tape is all being right. Because if your body's in the bay for that long and the hair is still stuck to it, and you ruled out Scott as the donor, but you didn't rule Lacey in 1,000%, man, you know, that's why we're still talking about this story today. One of the reasons anyway. So I don't know, but let's move on. This next guy, the prosecution witness number 89, this guy's an expert fisherman named Angelo Cuanang, and he gets qualified as an expert fisherman for the San Francisco Bay. He's a commercial fisherman. That's what he does for a living, right? And he gets qualified by the judge, and he tells everything about catching sturgeon and the best places to fish for them, and what, you know, different times of the year, how it has an effect on the sturgeon, if you can catch them or not. Basically, he tries to raise suspicion that Scott Peterson did truly go fishing on December the 24th. And now Pat Harris gets up and cross-examines and reminds the jury that Scott is just a recreational fisherman and not commercial. And Cuanang had explained the difference between the two, and as a commercial fisherman, he has to know everything there is to know about sturgeon fishing, and Scott's just a weekend warrior angler, supposedly, and just uses fishing as a hobby, right? So, and I don't really know anything about that, but the Harris says how much more attention Scott would draw to himself if he was at the bay for the sinister purpose of dumping Lacey's body by having fishing gear on his boat. And a recreation boating doesn't require a license. So without fishing gear, he wouldn't be questioned by a game warden. And with gear, he would be if a game warden happened to see him. Well, that's not exactly true. A game warden, if you're on the water, the game wardens, they can stop you. And they can stop you for a safety check. They can stop you to make sure you have your required life preserver and a fire extinguisher and stuff like that. So he could have been stopped either way. So they got that wrong. I was scorched, but neither really here nor there. Now, let's go to insurance, right? And prosecution witness number 90 is a guy named Brian Ulrich. And he's the insurance agent for Principal Financial Group. Now, Ulrich testifies that all about the policies that were taken out by Scott and Lacey. And he said he met them in San Luis Obispo when the Petersons had that sports bar I told you about, the shack. And he said when the Petersons bought their home in October 2000, Brian was actually engaged to one of Lacey's best friends. And Brian and her attended the Peterson's housewarming party in November of 2000 and again their Christmas party in 2000. And in January of 2001,
Ryan was no longer an insurance agent. He began working as a financial advisor, but he called Scott to see if he had any interest. And that's when both Scott and Lacey met with him. Now, Brian told Scott he should take out a $250,000 policy on himself and Lacey, and $100,000, both the whole life type policies, y'all. And Lacey says, well, you know what? If you're going to take that out of me, take the same amount out of Scott. So they did it, and they started IRA accounts, and Scott was making the largest contribution payment into his. Now, defense attorney Garrigo says that, right? And the premiums for the insurance policies were $150 each, and the IRA contribution, $75 each, for so $450 a month taken directly from their checking accounts. Now, they purchased the life insurance policies long before Lacey disappeared. So but you know what? People do it all the time. And later on, this, you know, you want to kill them for the money, right? You were like, I don't like this motherfucker anymore, and I got this insurance policy. It won't look guilty on me because we took it out 4 years earlier. So they can't remove that as a financial motive, but you don't have to prove motive. But Scott never tried to get the money, y'all, after Lacey disappeared, and he didn't even ask about it. So obviously, you know, the insurance wasn't a motive. And if he had inquired about it, he would have found out that policy cannot be collected on a missing person for several years. Okay. Now, if they're dead, obviously, and they find them in the bay, that's a different story. Defense attorney Garrigos says it was 7 years in California that the person has to be missing, and Brian testifies that he's not certain. And Garrigo says that surely Scott would have arranged their death in a way to produce a body so he could get the insurance, and he would at least ask about the payment from the life insurance company. Brian did testify that Scott did not make any attempt to inquire about the life insurance policy after Lacey disappeared. So good job for Garrigos on that. But you got to throw it out there. All right. Go to Tuesday, July 27, 2004. Now, this is kind of strange. The jury was taken to see the boat. Okay. Now, look, when they take them out there to see the boat, they're not allowed to ask any questions. There's no testimony. They just take them to see it. All they get to do is look at the boat. I mean, you can't even talk to each other. They're just looking at this fucking boat, right? This little 14-foot boat. So then they bring them back to court, and the prosecution calls witness number 91, who is David Weber, who's the vice president of engineering of low boats. That's the same type of boat that allegedly Scott used. So David Weber testifies to the stability of Scott's boat, and he provides sparks something uncommon this holiday with just the right gift from Uncommon Goods. The busy holiday season is here, and Uncommon Goods makes it less stressful with incredible hand-picked gifts for everyone on your list, all in one spot. Gifts to spark joy, wonder, delight, and that's exactly what I want it feeling. Hey, y'all, I ordered a super cool piece. It's a candle with a sculpture of LSU Tiger Stadium on top of it. And each officially licensed laser-cut wooden replica features up to 4 layers of detail, creating a bird's-eye view of a specific football field, seating section, and more. And every label includes your stadium's name, the team's logo, and school location. And it has a coconut, soy, vegan wax infused with sandalwood smell that creates tailgates and touchdown scent profile, reminiscent of game day. It's invigorating like fresh-cut grass and nostalgic like smoke from a pre-game grill. And calming like the crisp autumn air of a new semester on campus. Y'all, I love it. I have it at the base of my TV, and I'm ready to watch the Tigers play on Saturday night, right?
Uncommon Goods. Look, when you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. And many of their handcrafted products are made in small batches. So shop now before they sell out this holiday season. Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade or made in the U.S. They have the most meaningful, out of the ordinary gifts anywhere. They even have gifts you can personalize. From holiday hosts and hostess gifts to the coolest finds for kids to hits for everyone from the book lovers to diehard sports fans. Uncommon Goods has something for everyone, not the same old selections you can just find anywhere. And with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. They've donated more than $3 million to date. So to get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/RLRC. That's uncommongoods.com/RLRC for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary. Hey, y'all, you want to set your child up for success? Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with the subject? Is your child ahead, not getting challenged enough in class? Well, IXL Learning is an online learning program that enriches your homeschool curriculum. It offers practice in math, English, language arts, science, and social studies while adapting to each child, meeting them where they are. Plus, IXL encourages students to become curious and empowers them to choose how to learn. Look, we homeschool our son. No doubt about it. He's more of a visual learner, and we use IXL, and Cindy teaches him, and there are so many different benefits to the program. It adapts to exactly what he needs in different areas. So IXL is the perfect supplement to your homeschool curriculum. IXL offers interactive practice problems, educational games, lessons, and video tutorials for every topic you're teaching at home. It's easy to use, time-saving. Everything on IXL is organized by grade, subject, topic, and subtopic, making it simple to find activities for the exact skills you're covering. IXL offers instant feedback and explanations of new topics as kids use the program. Kids can explore any topic in any grade level. They aren't forced into a single learning path like they are on other programs. If you're homeschooling your child because they were falling behind or because they were too far ahead like our son, IXL is a great program to help them get the exact support they need. Kids love IXL's positive feedback awards and educational games. IXL is trusted by 15 million students worldwide and has proven to improve performance in over 75 scientific research studies. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And Real Life Real Crime listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/today. Visit IXL.com/today to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price. And don't forget, Real Life Real Crime listeners get 20% off. Y'all, we really do use this product, and it's been a godsend. Detailed information about how the industry tests the boats to get them certified, okay? And the tests are designed by the U.S. Coast Guard, and they're tested for maximum capacity and the total number of people they'll hold and pounds of weight and all that good shit, and including gear. And they test them in the worst-case scenarios, right? So on direct examination, the test appeared convincing. Scott would have had no trouble keeping his boat afloat or stable while dumping Lacey's body into the bay. But then here we go. The defense gets up and they scorch this testimony. Then they say, hey, they basically summarize it like this. They got it to confirm that these tests performed by Lowe have nothing to do with the murder trial. They were not performed in an attempt to duplicate Scott dumping Lacey's body, okay? And these are standardized tests performed on every boat for markability as well as safety purpose. So basically, they're saying, Weber, you don't know dick about this case, and your testimony doesn't mean dick, right? And that's what happens. You're given an illusion of a test, like, you know, you're taking out to see the boat and get this guy to testify about all of the weight standards and all this stuff, and that it could, you know, theoretically, Scott could have safely dumped Lacey's body in using it, but that test was never done. He's just testifying about the industry standards. And, you know, they tried to make it sound as if this test was being done, if that makes sense. So they give Weber to state that, you know, the test would not duplicate anything having to do with Scott, right? And so, you know, they asked Weber, you know, why the test wasn't done that would duplicate Scott's situation, including the gear he had in the boat, the supposed anchors, and all that. And I mean, he had to admit this just wasn't done, right? So basically they get him to state that the test was done in the swimming pool and he didn't use all the, you know, the exact conditions that Scott would have had, like the weight from Lacey's body and the weight from the anchors and everything else. And all the tests Weber performed and included 142 pounds distributed evenly along one side of the boat. Now that would have been Lacey's weight. You know, Garagos asked if the boat was ever tested using 400 pounds and at one point along the wayside, meaning like Scott and Lacey's weight combined, he would have had to get over one side of the boat to roll her out. And Weber says no. And he asked Weber if he would expect that would capsize the boat. And Weber says, I can't honestly say. All right. So there you go. So now we're going to roll it. They didn't have a court, y'all, on the Wednesday the 28th for whatever reason. And we're going to roll into Thursday, July the 29th. And gets a little spicy here, if you will. On Thursday, boom, Sam. So let's roll no court on Wednesday the 28th. And on Thursday, July 29th, they had a hearing, not court was in session, and they played the Diane Sawyer interview. Then Judge DeLucci rejected the defense's motion for dismissal, and he ruled on the interviews that will be allowed in the evidence. All right. So let's fast forward a little bit. On to Monday, the 2nd of August of 2004, and the prosecution called witness number 92, 93, 94, 95, being Gary Nienhuis, a Modesto city auditor, Jeffrey John Coleman, a Trade Corp accountant, Kip Loving, a Turlock PD, and Kip Stockman of Modesto PD. Nothing to it, y'all. Let me skip right through them. So, y'all, everything in between now and Amber Frey is kind of irrelevant, but they had some conferences in the chambers stipulating to, you know, the chain of custody and how couple packages of evidence were transferred in envelopes and stuff like that. None of it's fucked up, all right? And then both sides ended up stipulating to it. And then on Tuesday, August the 10th, 2004, game changer comes, right? Up until this point, you're a regular Joe sitting on the jury and you've listened to all this stuff. And like I told you, at this point, you hadn't proved to me beyond a reasonable doubt that Scott did it because of the burglaries and the sex offenders and all the different shit. One sex offender even confessed to doing it, right? And then the hair on the duct tape is huge that because it didn't belong to Scott, but they couldn't say it belonged to Lacey. But you know it wasn't Scott's. But now, guess who they call? Miss Amber Frey. And she was the only witness call for the entire week. And her whole testimony, y'all, was, you've all heard the tapes. And she recorded at the request of the police department. She recorded all these conversations that Scott, hey, baby,
love you. And he, like, he's acting, he's at the Eiffel Tower when he's really at the memorial or whatever it's called for Lacey and Connor and shit like that. And I mean, he's just lying all the way, even after she busts him. And she, I mean, she tells him, she goes on for the press conference. He knows she's been recording. He knows she's outing him as an adulterer, et cetera. And he still talks to her, right? So that's what they spent a whole fucking week on it. And, you know, it's very, very damning. You're a regular person sitting on the jury and you're hearing all this shit that Scott was doing while his wife and unborn baby were missing. Okay. And, you know, it's just crazy, but yeah, those have all been played and replayed, et cetera. When the prosecution finishes with Amber, you would think that the defense is going to, Gergos and him are going to get their chance, right? Well, no. The judge says court's closed until Monday, August 16th of 2004, right? So the jury gets to sit and all weekend, basically a 3-day weekend, and think about all this shit they just heard. All, I love you, baby. And all the stuff that, and all the lies that specifically the ones that he told Amber while Lacey and Connor were still missing. All right. And even after, but so if you're a jury member and you heard that, you'd be like, holy fuck, this dude is guilty as sin, right? All right, so let's go to prosecution witness number 102, Amber Frye's actual testimony. I told you most of it was they played the recordings, right? Very dramatic when you can do that. So, but now the cross-examination is delayed through the weekend, and Gergos finally gets to cross-examine Amber. So they call her to the stand, and Gergos says, he stands up and he says, Your Honor, I don't have any questions. And then like everybody's like, what the fuck? And he was like, nah, I'm just playing. People really take, it's a fucking murder trial, dude. Why are you joking around? That's kind of scorched on your shit. So during the cross examination, Gergos kind of tripped Amber up and she says she couldn't remember a lot, right? And he said, basically, that's convenient that you don't remember or that you can't be sure. And what Gergos was able to get out of her on this first day was a clear picture of how Amber got into the relationship with Scott. And he also got her to tell about her relationship with Scott and how Richard Byrd, BYRD, fit into her growing suspicions about Scott. Now, Gergos pounded on the amount of drinking and sex the couple had in their 4 dates. Kind of like, you get it? You're trying to throw shade on her, doing anything you can, because now she's been, by the prosecution, you know, she voluntarily went undercover, basically, and now he's trying to throw shade on her. So he goes to the list of calls, and he says, look, there were no calls between November 19th and the 23rd. And Amber says, like, I'm sure Scott called. And he must have been calling from a different number or from a payphone. And Amber had 3 phone calls with Byrd on the 8th, plus a visit with Sean, but she didn't remember if they talked about Scott. Okay. Now, on the 21st, she had another long phone call with Byrd, but she can't remember if they talked about Scott, but possibly they did. And now Byrd, she says, is the one that first became suspicious of Scott, but she didn't remember when that was. And when Byrd asked her, when do you want me to check this guy out? He said he would after David Perez, his roommate, returned. Now, Perez is a detective in Sacramento Police Department and had access to a larger database. And Amber said, she's testifying this, that Perez has a larger database access than Byrd did in Fresno. Well, guess what? That's not true. It's all the NCIC computer. So then there were no calls
from December the 20th through the 24th. But Amber said she had called, said that he had called from Sacramento, and she called the number back but got no answer. And she thought he was at the airport there, so she called him and had him page y'all at the airport. He didn't answer the page. She called Scott twice on Christmas and left messages. Then Doug Sibley called Scott using Amber's phone. Okay. Gargos asked Amber how many times she called Scott on the 26th. And she says, I can't remember. He showed her the phone records and had her count them. She called Scott 14 times, y'all, on December 26th. But they weren't all connections. Some of them went straight to voicemail or nobody picked up. She said she was trying to contact him to thank him for the Christmas present, which Gargos showed to the jury. Now, Amber went to her friend's house, Denise, on the 28th, and they did an internet search on Scott but didn't find anything. And on the December 29th, she called Bird and then went over to his house. Now, she had met with Bird on the evening of the 24th, but didn't recall if they talked about Scott. Now, y'all, you want to be as honest as you can, but too many I don't recalls when you're very specific on that. On the other things, it scorched on the prosecution's part because they should have anticipated that Gargos was going to hammer her on all this shit. And they could have simply gone over the testimony and she could have had, yes, this happened. No, this didn't happen. And it said, I don't recall. And then Gargos shows the evidence and makes it look like a fucking liar. So on the 29th, Berg calls Amber at 3:09 p.m. and left a message. And then she calls him back at 6:20 p.m. And he told her Scott may be connected to a missing woman in Modesto. And he gave her the tip line to call. And that's when she did call a tip line the first time. And she couldn't get anybody to take her serious. But she did not call Scott. Now, on December 30th, this is after the second call, when Brocchini and them heard, the detectives heard, and they went out and met with her, right? So she meets with Detective Brocchini and Bueller in Madera, California. They told her Scott was a suspect, but they weren't making that public. And she admits it was her idea to pretend that she was pregnant so she could get more out of Scott. She had no problem at all. She was totally down for recording Scott's conversations. Now, Gargos asked Amber if she told Bird about her cooperation with the Modesto Police Department. Guess what? Amber says, I can't recall. And she was at the Modesto Police Department on the January 6th call when she confronted Scott. So she, because Brocchini and them were prepping her for the call and telling her what to ask. Now, Gargos shuts down the cross for the day, but not before he grilled the shit out of Amber on whether Amber taped all the calls between her and Scott and reported them. She says that she taped all the calls. She said it was never brought to her attention that the Modesto Police Department didn't believe she had taped all the calls. And she didn't find out about the wiretap on Scott's phone until after his arrest. So there you go. Let's move to Tuesday, August the 24th, 2004. All right. And they call Amber Fry back again. In conclusion of Gargos' cross-examination, all right, the law enforcement told Amber that Scott was tracked in Fresno and they were worried about her. And that's why they wanted her in Modesto on January 6th, 7th, and 8th. But this wasn't any report, y'all, and scorched on law enforcement because I told you, if you don't write it down, it didn't happen. Now, he said it seems they lied to her and told her Scott was in Fresno and tried to make her afraid. And that's why she went to Modesto. Now, law enforcement wanted her in Modesto to see when every time that Scott called her, and if it, so they could control the conversation and tell her what questions to ask. When she was there, Detective Bueller and the Special Agent Hagen with FBI listened to all the calls while she was there. Now, Gerga says, did Scott ever tell you that he loved you? And she says, not in so many words. And there was a lot of back and forth. And finally she says, no, he never told me that he loved me. All right. So on 1-8, January the 8th, there was a tape call and Gargos gets it in, introduces it, or Scott tells Amber he has an attorney. He gives Amber the attorney's name. He spells it for her, and he gives the phone number to the attorney and also tells her the attorney says, I shouldn't talk to you. And he would be pissed if he found out we were talking. And he tells her about a PI that they hired, right? Now, y'all, the basic, the rest of it is, you know, that Gargos is getting Amber to show a different perspective from the calls than the law enforcement had. And one of them, Scott, tells her, hey, look, I would never hurt you. And yes, y'all, you've all heard this one. He says, yes, she's hurt me. You ever hurt me? Your wife and your kid are missing. And he's like, look, that's emotionally. He said, but I would never harm you physically. And Amber says, Lacey's missing because you love me. Scott says, no, she's missed because somebody took her, right? Well, that's pretty powerful. They talked about the media attention on the case. And Scott says, I hope they don't bother you like they hound me. And then they talked all about the media. So then he gets in a tape from the 7th January. And Amber asks Scott, what if the cops arrest you? And Scott says, I had nothing to do with it. So Gargos asked her, said, did he ever try to talk you out of going to law enforcement? Amber says, I don't recall. He said, did he ever try to dissuade you? Amber says, I don't recall. And it just tennis match. Boom, 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 boom. And he's asking, I don't recall. Finally, Amber says, he didn't try to stop me from going to the cops. And Gargo says, well, you know what? You were there and they're telling you what questions to ask. He said, what happened to the notes that they gave you, the questions? Amber says, I don't know. You'll have to ask them. All right, that's scorched on the cops' part because they ain't in there. Then Gargo says, okay, now the pictures from New Year's Eve. You had two prints made, yes? You gave one set to the cops and the other one to your father. And Amber says, yes, to put in the safe deposit box. And he says, did you ask your dad if he sold them? She's like, I can't recall. So Dave Girardelli, which happened 3 years prior to Lacey going missing, he says they had a relationship. He's talking about Amber. But now they're just friends. And he told her 3 years ago he lost his wife more recently, and she ran into his wife at a car wash. But he kept up the lie for 3 years, y'all. And finally, to get to the last conversation on February 19th, and Gargo says, did Detective Bueller tell you to do this? And Amber says, yes. He wanted to see Scott's reaction. Gargo says, did he tell you he needed to be present? Amber says, I don't recall. Said, did he tell you to tell Scott no more contact? And Amber says, yes. Said, Gargo says, did he tell you he was upset with you for doing this on your own outside his presence? Amber says, I don't recall. And when he said, well, what do you think of his reaction? And how did you perceive it? And Amber says, well, I was shocked. So, all right, y'all. So let's talk about prosecution witness number 104, Daniel White, who is AT&T Director of Technical Operations, and I'll be brief. But White testified that the cell phone tower locations could not be used to precisely identify a person's location because the records being discussed were created for the purpose of detecting cell phone fraud. They were not intended to be used by the law enforcement in cases, in criminal cases. So Gergos hounds on this, on the points to further his argument from Mary Anderson, who is another AT&T employee, who says on the night of the 26th that Scott's cell bounced off of three different cell phone towers when he was walking around his yard. And she had said that, you know, if one of the towers is busy, it'll send it to another tower. And Gergos uses this to further his argument for Mary Anderson's testimony. And much of the focus was on the December 24th call to the voicemail at 10:08 a.m. And that voicemail call is critical to the prosecution's claim. And the testimony basically says that the cell phone records can determine within a very small range where the caller is, but not always. And White said he could not rule out the exceptions to the usual pattern until he had checked more records for site traffic at the time on the 24th. And he hadn't yet checked these records because he wasn't asked to. Booyah, scorched, okay? And why? This is, of course, this has all been brought up on appeal over the years, y'all. I'm telling you the shit that you haven't heard about in the media. The why, as the cops, when you are going to introduce cell phone records and just try to say this way, why wouldn't you say, have this guy check it out every way that he can, right? Because you're trying to get confirmational bias for your shit. You're not thinking outside of the box like a defense attorney is going to think. And it happens in cases, y'all. It happens in cases. I had it in a case on mine where a guy fled to Mexico, well, to Brownsville, and his cell phone pinged off of different towers, blah, 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 and it ended up the prosecution wouldn't use it for that very reason. Because they at that time, at the same time, 2005, what that case was, they couldn't say with a pinpoint certainty that it was the guy. So scorched. And we're almost done. And then we're going to get into the most recent thing. And so next week, we'll try to conclude the series of Scorched. And I know y'all have seen his new interviews from jail and all that by now. It's just so fucking much bullshit. And again, we wouldn't be talking about it had they done their jobs. And that's just the way that it is. So I love and appreciate each and every one of y'all. Go download the Real Life Real Crime Community app for free from the App Store. It has all the episodes, all the shows, forums, chat groups, games, merchandise. And we do have subscribers in there. I affectionately call them convicts. And that's where every new show, the True Crime Time 4 that Cindy and I are doing, you may not get those as early as you'll get the Real Life Real Crime originals or the hashtag Justice for Haley, but you're going to get them commercial free, where the Daily Show used to not be commercial free. And you never got them early at all because of time constraints. So, Patreon of convicts, you know, you're about to have a shit ton of stuff in there. And probably by the time that only you can view, and I'm talking about hours and hours of videos and interrogations and different things. Now, if you don't want to be a convict, then you don't want to download the app and you want to subscribe, you can go to patreon.com, type in Real Life Real Crime, and it'll explain all the different levels to you there. Again, that gets you access to commercial-free early releases, plus bonus episodes, plus all the bonus materials that we're putting up. And hashtag Justice for Haley, y'all. Man, if you thought the first episode was something, it is nothing compared to what's coming. And we need everybody to share it. Share it like you did Courtney Coco. Share it like you did Mary Pooh Shows. Share it like you did Miss Barbara Blunt. And we will, I firmly believe we're going to get a murder indictment. So, and that's just hashtag Justice for Haley. And LOPA, Louisiana Oregon Procurement Agency, you know, they're my jam. And you, yeah, they, y'all are a nonprofit. I close every show with them. You've been listening for years. I'm sure if you've been listening to this long-ass series, you certainly know. But you don't have to be a lifer from Louisiana. You could be a lifer from Indiana. Just go to LOPA.org, fill out the 2-minute questionnaire thing, and sign up to be a organ donor, be a hero, give the gift of life, sign all that great stuff. And thank you again for liking and listening and sharing. And I'm going to wrap this up as soon as I can, and we'll be back to Real Life Real Crime Originals. I got a couple good old cop stories I'm going to tell. But I'm Woody Overton, your host of Real Life Real Crime, the podcast. Until next time or ever, don't let me catch you down on Murder Bayou. Peace.
Did you know that in Ohio, the state Supreme Court could just ignore the Reproductive Rights Amendment we passed last year?
But so many Ohioans voted for it.
That's why we need to keep extremists out of the court by voting for Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that.
Here's the trick. Just remember, don't stop fighting. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes. If you supported Issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue.